It's time now for Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. Now, here's your host, Colin Fluxman.
Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. If you're a first-time listener, we discuss the legal and financial aspects of divorce, in addition to matters that affect the family as a whole. Lisa Zonder is our divorce attorney. Steve Wagner discusses money matters. And our technical producer, Tom Spence, chimes in from time to time. Hello again, Lisa, Steve, and Tom. You'll find us online at divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com, where you can listen to past shows, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. Today we'll be discussing relationship contracts, mediation, and a simplified divorce, and a special guest who hosts the Father's Resource Show out of Denver, Colorado. Lisa, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you too, Colin.
At one time or another, we've each had written or verbal contracts, whether to purchase a new car or a home or deals we strike with our kids. For example, they do their homework and they get a friend over, etc., or they get to go to the mall. Whatever, but Lisa has experience in the realm of marriage and divorce and wants to share some ideas about contracts between couples.
I do, Colin. Actually, I'm kind of hoping that as I talk about this topic, maybe you can jump in and talk to me about what you think some ideal relationship contract terms might be.
Sounds good.
But let me give you some input here into what I've seen online. I read something about Mark Zuckerberg and his wife Priscilla that they have a relationship contract. And the article that I read says that one of the terms of the relationship contract requires Mark Zuckerberg to spend at least 100 minutes of shared time per week, and it can't be at his office. And his wife also asked him for one date night weekly. So in my mind, after reading that, I thought it was kind of interesting, and I'm sure we all have verbal contracts with, you know, our spouses or significant others, but it occurred to me, I wonder, you know, whether many folks have actual written agreements on these lifestyle terms.
That would be hard to imagine, and I would think that 1.5 hours of shared time a week is hardly enough. But the date night is a factor, wouldn't you think, Tom?
Definitely. I think it's a brilliant idea. It's odd to think, oh, there's going to be in 5-minute increments and who's keeping a watch on it, the countdown. That could be something, but I think it's good. And like FaceTime on a phone, would you have a deal with somebody like him? He might be Facebooking a lot, so you'd say you only get 5 hours of screen time a week.
Well, that's true, but would those 100 minutes include FaceTime, as Tom has indicated? That's a good question. I don't know.
It is a good question.
You have to like me at least once a week.
But that's a relationship contract. Can each be held liable for breaking those conditions?
I don't think legally, but maybe just within the confines of the marriage, you know? You're in or you're out, depending on whether you abide the terms.
Now, is he married, or this is his partner?
I think this is his wife now.
Oh, so they have I misunderstood. I thought that they had a relationship, but part of the deal of this civil contract is that they would spend the 100 minutes per week. Whether it's working or not, there's no report on that, is there?
No report on that one.
Okay.
But what I did find also is, while these lifestyle provisions that we're talking about, generally, they're not going to be binding, you know, in law or anything like that. There are some things that I found online about love contracts and couples who delineate what their expectations are. And you suggested one would be about a date night, for example. Some people will put in the vacations that are mandated.
Yes.
Cuddle time, hobby time, how much weight each party can gain. Can you imagine that if you were under some sort of contract,
that's
even if it's just in your relationship?
That's a really tough one.
Sex schedules. Okay, I knew you were going to react to that one.
No reaction from me, Tom. Sex schedule?
Yeah, I'll let that go for now.
All right.
And gym frequency. And there was a blog that I read also that was kind of interesting by someone named Simone Collins, and she talked about contracts where people discuss their finances and whether their earnings are going to be shared or kept separate, how their accounts would be structured, how much money they would put toward their savings. And that's probably pretty common, I would imagine. But when it comes to living arrangements, how do you handle your household chores? You know, what's your level of required
cleanliness? Put that on the refrigerator. On the refrigerator, say, his and hers. This is what she has to do. This is what I have to do. This is what the kids have to do. And I think it's more important to have relationship contracts with the kids, specifically telling them what they should do, what their chores are, what their rights and obligations are.
Well, at least they get a gold star on the fridge, right, if they manage to abide. But what happens to your spouse?
Give him or her a gold star.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be finding those on refrigerators everywhere.
Reward in different ways, with flowers, with chocolates, with date nights, with jewelry, and vice versa for whatever he likes. Give him an extra hour in front of the television.
There you go, watching sports.
How about that?
But I think also one thing that couples seem to argue about a lot is the temperature in the room. I don't know if any of you have experienced that.
Emotional temperature or physical temperature?
The physical temperature, hot and cold. You know, the air conditioner goes up, it goes down. You know, the heat goes up, it goes down. That seems to be a pretty common fight that I hear about, at least in my practice.
But you know, Lisa, this should all be sorted out before you put on the wedding ring, right? These are the things that attract you to the person because you like the same things, you experience the same things, you want the same things. To find all of these things out after you're married, I don't know.
Okay, what about the tube of toothpaste that, you know, one person forgets to put the cap back on? All that stuff
Besides that, I hear about
in my office.
I like to wind it up from the bottom. As the toothpaste is being used, I like to squeeze it from the bottom. And if my kids don't do that, I get very upset.
So the question is whether to put these in a contract.
I don't think so.
So, people will also contract around these lifestyle contracts we're talking about around kids and how they're going to be raised, what religion, their education. A lot of couples that come to my office, they have issues around private school versus public school. That's another common, dialogue that comes up. How to punish the kids, you know? Was it with a wooden spoon? Is it with, you know, just a
sitting
verbal
down and talking
timeout,
to them, yeah.
You know, and that kind of thing.
How does that make you feel?
That's for the shrink parents to deal with. But then also allowances for children, what activities, financial support, et cetera. And others that were mentioned in the article are pets. Some people, you know, are deathly allergic to cats, and that's just a deal breaker in a relationship. And so I've heard so much that I think it makes sense if you don't put it in writing, at least to have these verbal understandings or acknowledgments before you put the ring on it, as you say, or before you get into that committed.
Again, yes, before you get into the committed relationship, either marriage or cohabitation, these things are very important, and these are the things that can make or break the relationship.
And especially when it comes to how to deal with relatives and outsiders. I was talking to a client of mine yesterday. Who's
and family.
Yes, exactly. She's in the marriage and family therapy program. And we were talking about, you know, how you have an inner circle. I think that was even in a movie that I remember seeing recently. I think it might have been with De Niro. But anyway, there's the inner sanctum, so to speak. And that is your immediate family, your nuclear family. And then you have the extended family. And one of the things that comes up for a lot of couples who end up, unfortunately, in divorce is how do they deal with those in-laws? You know, especially the problem in-laws. What happens at family reunions with that cousin who you particularly can't stand, you know? And so how do you deal with a sick or an aging parent? These are issues that come up for a lot of couples that, you know, when everybody's in the honeymoon phase, they don't really give a lot of thought to it. But
I'm reminded of the Chevy Chase movie, The National Lampoon Vacation, where I think it's his brother or his cousin from somewhere else comes in and brings the whole family, and that's topsy-turvy. But that is a big issue, Lisa. And Tom, I'm sure you've had experience with that.
I think it's huge, especially when you have a child. Because once a child comes in, one grandma, well, we always did this and we always did that. And that gets really, really heavy. And I mean, that was a big deal with us. Oh, it's okay, just give them water. Well, our doctor said water at this point. I did that. And you really, and the level of tension goes way up.
Right.
And I would say, what I've been hearing here, I'm all for the contracts. I think they're very logical. They're very smart. They could be done in fun ways. Everything doesn't have to be put down, but you could, you know, make it semi-amusing and sort of tongue-in-cheek. But the other movie with Richard Dreyfuss, I think it was A Goodbye Girl, remember? And I don't like the panties on the run. There's things that you learn as you go through. What do you mean I can't have my beer signs up? And that might sound little. What do you mean I can't play Neil Young instead of this Barry Manilow? It's really a big deal. And even if you do it with a sense of humor, I think it's smart.
This is superficial stuff, Lisa. And you have covered in the past that when couples live together, they should have some kind of civil contract between the two of them in the event of a separation.
Yeah, we talked about cohabitation agreements, right?
Correct. So this is different. This is different from what you're saying.
Yeah, this is more related to the details of not the legalities.
The day-to-day stuff.
This is the day-to-day stuff where people, you know, initially in the honeymoon phase aren't really thinking about how these habits that seem all cute and adorable when they're dating, how are these going to affect me, you know, when we're living together day to day. And so I think this is kind of important stuff. I mean, obviously, if you're a yes person and you say yes to your partner, no matter what he or she does, then a lot of this stuff melts away and isn't important anymore. But I do find a lot of couples come in, and these are the types of things we hear complaints about later. And it's just those little things that irritate people. It's just the small stuff, you know, that creeps up sometimes. And so, I mean, if you have these relationship contracts, there are other issues that we haven't even gotten to yet. What about definitions of fidelity? You know, is porn okay? Is that unfaithful behavior? Mm-hmm. What about contingency plans if there are extreme events that happen, such as a job loss? A lot of people can't cope with that, or insolvency, sickness. You know, what if somebody's injured? If you are afraid that just the idea of creating a relationship contract is going to ruin your relationship, then you need to kind of take a step back and ask yourself why you don't have enough courage or confidence in the relationship to be able to negotiate some of these terms. And I do think they're important. I don't think they necessarily need to be written down. But how nice is it to actually sort some of this stuff out before you get married?
Right. You have some research to share about 5 trust contracts for couples.
I do. And these trust contracts are, let me give you a little bit of backstory on this, because I've heard some psychological studies and some research and theories that talk about how do you deepen a couple's relationship. You know, it bugs me sometimes because all I talk about is divorce and people think, wow, that's such a, you know,
a downer.
Yeah. What a topic. You know, it's so deep and it's always, you know, emotional and it triggers things for people. So I've always tried to think about the opposite, you know, and how do you deepen couples' relationships? And I don't know if you've ever heard the famous book called Games People Play.
Yes,
it's
I have.
Famous psychological book. So Dr. Eric Byrne was a psychiatrist and he was known as the creator of transactional analysis. This is some psychobabble stuff, but he was the author of that famous book, Games People Play.
Right.
And he mapped out in interpersonal relationships, you know, that there are 3 ego states. And that's, we all have like a parent, an adult, and a child state. And I'm no expert on this topic. I think the farthest I've gotten is psychology in college. So pardon me for any therapists out there listening if I misstate anything. But this Dr. Byrne tried to investigate how communications between individuals based on those current states of each of those states that you have, the parent, adult, and child, and how those interactions go. And he called those transactions. And then he used the label games to talk about and refer to the patterns of transactions that pop up repeatedly in everyday life. And then another psychologist built on what Dr. Byrne did, Dr. Cartman, and he described a drama triangle, which is also a famous model used in psychology and psychotherapy. And Dr. Cartman is the one who went on and he brought up this theory of 5 trust contracts that couples need to make. So there's a controlling parent or a no-collapse contract. And in that one, the couple actually keeps the structure of the relationship so no one, for example, quits their job or threatens to walk out. Because without this contract, we think of what's the flip side of not having this deal term in your relationship is someone can turn around and say, I can decide to do whatever I want, and it's my choice, and I don't care how it affects you. So the first trust contract is the no collapse contract. After that, there's a second contract between couples. It's called the nurturing parent or protection contract. In that one, you're trying to protect your partner's feelings. The goal is you don't leave them to deal with feelings alone, and you save the other person from needless hurt. So what would the flip side of that be? Without that contract, you would be saying to your partner, you deal with it yourself. Those are your feelings. I don't really care. So that's an important contract that couples should make to deepen their trust in their relationship. Also, there's one in the adult state of those ego states that we talked about, which is the openness contract. You throw out the stuff where you're evasive or secretive, because the flip side of that is without a contract like that, the partner can simply say, I don't owe you anything. I don't have to tell you anything. So that openness between the couple is really important, that, we don't avoid each other, we don't evade each other, we're open about stuff. There's also the free child, and again, the ego state of the child. It's the pleasuring contract, where the couple agrees we're going to pleasure each other instead of saying we can have fun in our own way. I'm not going to elaborate too much on this topic. Then the adapted child, or a flexibility contract. So another one of Dr. Cartman's suggestions for deepening the relationship between a couple is that they're flexible with each other, that they give in from time to time when they're having an argument to save the peace. That the flip side of that would be is if we don't have this contract, a partner would say to you, it looks like we see things differently and we're just going to have to agree to disagree. So no one ever gives in. So if you think about these five trust contracts and how they would affect and improve relationships, I think it could even be used potentially between business partners, but it more so in a loving relationship between husband and wife, or non-married cohabitants, people who are committed to each other.
You're listening to Divorce Leases Under Style, Saturdays 3 to 4 p.m. on AM 1590 KVTA. If you have an opinion, please send email to lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com, and we're coming right back.
Are you and your spouse contemplating a divorce? Divorce is very stressful and can present a minefield of obstacles. Lisa Zonda is a divorce attorney and mediator. She can help you through this process, providing a number of alternatives to court, such as mediation and collaborative divorce with a professional team. Lisa's main office is on Townsgate Road in Westlake Village. She also serves mediation clients in her satellite office on Camden Drive in Beverly Hills. One call to Lisa will set you on the path to a peaceful and economical resolution that is focused on your family. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zondafamilylaw.com. Contact Lisa Zonda today, certified family law specialist, State Bar of California, Board of Legal Specialization. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zondafamilylaw.com. If you mention you heard it on the radio, your first consultation is free for local and qualified clients. Call 805-777-7740. That's Lisa Zonda, 805-777-7740, or email Lisa at zondafamilylaw.com. Consultations are granted based on appropriate qualification as determined by Lisa Zonda. Her practice is limited to family law matters in Ventura County and Beverly Hills. Have you already filed for divorce and are overwhelmed by the process? Or you're in the midst of a divorce and not sure what to do next? Well, we have the answer for you. The Second Saturday Divorce Workshop. Explore the legal, financial, and emotional aspects of divorce. Discover community resources available to help you. Talk with others experiencing similar life changes. Learn from the experts who have guided others through divorce. Divorce educational and informational workshops are held at Ventura College of Law, 4475 Market Street in Ventura, on the second Saturday of each month from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Register by calling 805-372-1810. That's 805-372-1810. Or email us at secondsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. That's 2ndsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. Call 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810. Please do not phone the law school. Registration is through our Second Saturday website. We look forward to answering your questions.
You're listening to Divorce Leases Under Style, Saturdays 3 to 4 p.m. every Saturday on AM 1590 KVTA out of Ventura. On the line from Denver, Colorado is Mike Thompson, the founder of the Father Show Resource Program, formed as a nonprofit organization to educate and empower fathers of all socioeconomic backgrounds across the nation by providing pertinent information in an objective manner through various forms and channels. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you.
Glad to be on it. Yeah, nice to have you on the show. Tell us about your organization.
Well, the organization is a web-based program where men can go and find resources to help them in their day-to-day lives in all 50 states.
What motivated you to launch the Father Show?
Well, it was back after I had gotten divorced, and a few of my friends were going through divorce, and they, would always come to me and say, they don't know where they can go to find resources to help them. and it was just placed on my heart to do it. So I started the program with the ideal of helping men of all race, all ethnic background, and throughout the United States to be able to find a, to have a one place where they can go find resources that they need to help them.
Right. So this is currently only in the Colorado region. Is that right?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Is it only in Denver that you're running this this program, or are you spreading it across the U.S.?
Yes, we are spreading it all across the U.S.
So what kind of reaction have you had?
We've, you know, it's funny. We have great reaction from the women because they can always always find a man that can need these resources. But men are less enthusiastic about it, but, you know, we get a lot of phone calls from all across the United States when they have the need. So, you know, it's always like they say, you know, the pain is not bad enough yet
right.
for them to look. So, but that's why we set it up where men can go. You don't have to log in. You don't have to leave your information. All we're doing is providing a place where you can find those resources, call them yourself, and get the help that you are looking for.
Mike, many people are of the opinion, and I'm not necessarily reflecting mine or those on this particular show, that men get a bad deal in a divorce. What has been your experience, and what is your take on being a better dad, for example?
Well, you know, it is. It's, the men do get a bum rap, and because society has set it up where men, they don't feel that men are caretakers and can be caregivers. So when they go to court, you know, the men are normally just given every other weekend a visitation, and you know, then it progressed to every other weekend and then a weeknight for dinner. But you are limited to how much time you're spending with your child. And realistically, how can you build a relationship with your child or maintain a relationship with your child on an every other weekend basis? You know, you're getting, what, 4 days out of the month to build a relationship with your child or have a relationship with them? That's not enough.
Mike, this is Lisa yeah. Zonder. I just want to comment on what you're saying because I quite agree with you. I looked at some research and attended a seminar by a psychologist named Joan Kelly. And she was looking at, in a particular article she did in 2009, improving the quality of the parent-child contact, especially for parents who are separating.
Joan, you're looking up. I'm not hearing you.
Okay, that's Joan Kelly. She's a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And in her research, she actually speaks to the issue you just raised. And the research shows that it's really important for both parents to stay involved, not just the moms. In their kids' you know, lives, to the extent that they're there with knowing the teachers, their friends, and the extracurricular activities. And what she found and relayed in her research is that brief dinners and occasional weekend visits for dad are not enough, which is
absolutely
exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are you suggesting, Mike? What are you suggesting?
Well, you know, when I talk with parents, I really tell them to, when you're going through a divorce or a separation, they should be thinking of the well-being of the child first. And that doesn't mean putting the child in the middle of the issues that are going on between the two parents, but they both should be looking at what is in the best interest of our child. What is going to provide them with the least amount of stress as they are going through this process, just like the parents are.
Right.
So, yeah, they should be, you know, a father should not walk away, and I, you know, he should be spending as much time as possible as he can. You know, in my mind, I think when the parents go to court and they are saying, you know, we're going our separate ways, the court should be looking at it, okay, you're going to have them 50% of the time, and you're going to have them 50% of the time. Now tell me why that shouldn't be the case.
Lisa, from a legal perspective, isn't this what mediation is all about? getting people together to figure out what is in the best interests of both parties and especially the children.
Right. Well, here in California, you know, we are, at least in the Ventura County region, we require mandatory mediation, and they have recommendations from trained mental health professionals so that the court isn't just listening to the parents, but also taking input from a mental health professional. And in Los Angeles County, it's done differently. The parties are required to attend mediation for custody issues, but there is no report. So at that point, the court is going to listen to testimony from parents, but also frequently you'll have input from custody evaluators who are psychologists with, you know, enough expertise and in the field, I would say, and experience as well, dealing with children and custody relations and custody plans.
Now, Mike, with those kinds of restrictions or rules and regulations, aren't men getting a better deal based on that?
They can be, and they should be. I have read in other cases, and not to say that what goes on there is this way, but some mediation people, most mediation folks are female that I've come across. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes the female are going to side with the other mother. And that's not always the case, because I went through custody hearing with my daughter, and the ad litem that was assigned to the case was a female. And I actually won custody of my daughter after it took me about 6 years of fighting, but I finally won custody of her. So it's not always the case, but I do hear a lot about the fairness of it. And sometimes it goes against women. So
yeah,
it's not always against men. It sometimes goes against women as well.
Right, and I think that it's unfortunate that the courts, I mean, including the judges and some of the lawyers who are dealing with custody issues and the mental health professionals or guardians in your case that you're talking about, in many jurisdictions, they're still not up to speed on the latest research and what is in the best interest of children and how important it is to promote a relationship with both parents. And
right.
I think that's something that Dr. Kelly even talks about in her research. She's saying that, you know, their representative statistics aren't really available in all these jurisdictions, but there's general satisfaction in many countries and jurisdictions with the post-separation arrangements, meaning, you know, after the divorce, that ensures regular contact. But it's not always sufficient to make sure that the regular contact isn't always sufficient to ensure that the contact is to be able to have a meaningful relationship with the non-residential parent. And you're right, those are overwhelmingly the fathers that are getting left out. So you're right, there are some default arrangements that are recommended by a lot of lawyers and even sometimes guardian ad litems or, you know, custody evaluators. And the default seems to be this every other weekend with the dad is enough. And I quite agree that, you know, we need to look at these studies more carefully, because it seems that the you know, benefit is that if you have greater involvement from the dads, you know, usually the non-custodial parent is the dad, that is going to really affect the children. In fact, let me tell you some of the things she said in her study. She said the ability to maintain a meaningful relationship with both parents is one of the most important factors. And that is kids in joint physical custody arrangements are better adjusted than those children in sole custody arrangements, which speaks to what you said, Mike. And also, she has a longitudinal study that looks over the long term, you know, tracking the kids from over a long period of time, that the father's involvement in the kids' lives is associated with less delinquency. I mean, and here's another one. For adolescents, the more involved the fathers were, it was associated with adolescents less likely to smoke. I mean, so just gives you an idea of all these findings in this research supports exactly what you're saying, is we need to pay more attention to this. And the research even goes deeper than that and reveals that most children who were included in this research study, and young adults had expressed a strong desire to have more time with their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Mike,
you're absolutely correct. Yes, go ahead.
Your mission states the Father Show Resource Program allows men to gain the knowledge base that society has failed to ingrain. Now, in which way do you feel society has failed, actually?
And that's what I was going to piggyback off of the comment, because sometimes we need to educate men, because sometimes we are just too easy to just walk away, thinking that, well, you know what, I don't want to deal with her, the kids are better off with her, and so, I just walk away. They have no idea that the effect they're going to have on their kids by not being a part of their life, by being so nonchalant about it. And you do have your dads that, really want to be a part of the kids and really fight for it, but you have a lot of them that have just walked away because it's easier for them.
Well, Mike, I want to congratulate you on establishing the Father Show and doing the work that you're doing. I'm sure it's helping a lot of dads and a lot of families create better environment for their kids and for their lives as well.
Well, it's all about the kids, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
In order for us to have a better society in the future, we have to make sure that we're taking care of the kids now, and so they don't have to deal with some of these issues later.
Good point. Thanks for joining us today, Mike.
No, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're
listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle, Saturdays 3 to 4 p.m. on AM 1590 KVTA.
Need a lawyer? The Ventura County Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service is a state bar certified referral service dedicated to finding you the right lawyer. The County Bar Association is a non-profit corporation providing this referral program as a public service, which meets the American Bar Association standards. If you need legal help, the LRIS can place you in touch with a qualified lawyer who will assist you with your problem for a reasonable fee of $35 for a 30-minute consultation. Call the experienced professional staff at the County Bar Association at 805-650-7599, 805-650-7599, or email bar@vcba.org. The right call for the right lawyer. The Lawyer Referral and Information Service. 805-650-7599. Going through a divorce is never easy. It's not only emotionally draining, but the many financial decisions can add to your stress. For over 25 years, Ventura-based Stephen Wagner, certified financial planner of Wagner Financial, has been helping people just like you make smart decisions when emotions can sometimes get in the way. From planning your retirement income to investment management, Steve Wagner can create a roadmap that you can understand and follow as you embark on your new life. In addition to providing clients with access to informative financial content and useful tools, Wagner Financial will make you feel more confident about your financial stance now and in the future. Call 805-339-0760 for an appointment. That's 805-339-0760, or log on to wagnerfinancial.com. For that one-on-one personalized financial attention, call Steve Wagner Financial on 805-339-0760. 805-339-0760. Stephen H. Wagner is an investment advisor representative with Transamerica Financial Advisors, as well as securities and investment advisory services offered through TFA, member FINRA, SIPC, and a registered investment advisor. Wagner Financial is not affiliated with TFA.
Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle, Saturdays 3 to 4 p.m. on AM 1590 KVTA. Who do we have on the line there, Tom?
Steve is with us.
Ah, Steve, thanks for joining us today. Lisa and I were guests this week at the annual dinner that you hold, the Wagner Financial Dinner at the Spanish Hills Country Club in Camarillo.
Yeah.
You spoke most eloquently, Steve, of where we stand economically as a country and where we are headed. Give us a summary of what your speech was all about.
Well, as I mentioned at the meeting, our economy is not on fire. It's not great. I mean, last year it grew a little over 2.2%. This year it's projected to grow at about 2.4%. But, the great thing about that is that we're making steady progress. I use the example that we're in a plow horse economy. In the old days, the farmers had a mule and they had a plow, and the mule just guided the plow forward, and the farmer guided the plow, and you know, it wasn't exciting, but it was steady progress, and that's where we're at.
So how do you see the year unfolding economically, financially?
Well, I really think we're going to have some upside surprises to employment. I think you're going to continue to see the unemployment rate, which right now is at 6.7. I think you're going to see it fall. I think you're going to start to see United States corporations start to hire as the year goes on. U.S. corporations have record amounts of cash, record low debt, record low financing costs on their debt. And as a result, you know, they've been kind of holding this position for the last 3-4 years, really waiting for more certainty with U.S. government spending, ceiling, and all the other things that have been going on. But I really think that 2014 is going to be the year that finally you start to see an increase in corporate spending, and part of that will be on hiring new employees.
That sounds like great news, Steve.
That's really very good news.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, obviously, you know, we just had a great year in the stock market, and these things always happen in advance. You know, the market was up 29%, the S&P was, and as a result, you know, people are going to get more excited. You've got the wealth effect that's going on right now. People see their 401k balances going up, and so they feel better about themselves. Even though they're not going to spend that money, they feel better because their net worth is going up. And additionally, last year housing prices were up fully 8%. And again, that's a relief to everyone. So the two major areas of wealth creation, housing and the U.S. stock market, both went up quite a bit last year. So that's going to put people in a better mood. That's going to encourage you know, more productivity, more spending. And I think we're going to have another good year, not a great year, but a good year in the U.S. stock market this year.
I enjoyed your theme, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You didn't have the music, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, in the background there. But what was the ugly? This is what I'm interested in. What was the ugly, that the way you saw it?
The ugly was ugly. You know, the ugly was a few things, particularly the U.S. Treasuries. The U.S. Treasuries are the safest investment on the face of the earth. But if you had invested $100,000 in the safest investment on the earth at the beginning of 2013, by the end of 2013, that $100,000 would have depleted to $87,000, so a loss of 13%. And this is something that a lot of people are scratching their heads because they say, how can I lose money on U.S. government securities? Well, you can't if you'll hold the bond all the way to maturity, but you buy a 10-year bond, you got to hold it for 10 years to get your principal back. In return, you're just getting, you know, 1, 2, or 3%. In the interim, if you decide to sell those bonds, they can go down in value, and we certainly saw that last year. But the really ugly was gold. Gold was down 29%, and gold mining stocks were down 51% on the year. So it was pretty ugly.
That's crazy. There's a new face running the finance of the country, right?
Yeah, there is. We finally have a woman running our money, which is, you know, it might sound humorous, but it in the end, it is what it is, right? I mean, don't the women run the money anyway?
Who is she? Something about her?
Yeah, Janet Yellen is her name, and she is a close associate of Ben Bernanke. She's been on the worked with the Fed for many, many, many years, and worked very closely with Ben Bernanke, and quite frankly, is a disciple, so to speak, and agrees with Ben Bernanke's policies. So. She's already gone on record as saying that she's going to keep short-term interest rates low, actually zero, probably through the end of 2015 to early 2016. In fact, Ben Bernanke went on record a couple of weeks ago, and she agreed that even if unemployment got down to 6.5%, which was their original target to raise short-term rates, even if it got down to 6.5, they feel that they want it to go much lower than that before that they would begin to lower rates now. So we're going to have, you know, we're going to continue to see pretty much nothing on our savings accounts. But Janet Yellen is a lot like Ben Bernanke. She's very worried about a depression. She's very worried about deflation. And the way that you prevent that is by continuing with the low interest rate policy and purchasing assets, which they've also done to the tune of now $75 billion in U.S. government securities every month.
Steve, you remain upbeat and positive about the future, especially as far as this year is concerned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yes, Yes, I do. I do. I mean, there are a few worrisome things that could happen, and we talked about them. You know, certainly inflation is something that is a concern. Again, most economists that I respect don't see it happening until probably we begin to see some wage price increases, and we won't see that, Colin, probably until the unemployment rate hits at least 5%. Right now we're at 6.7. That just isn't going to happen this year, even with my optimistic view on U.S. Corporations beginning to hire again. We probably wouldn't see that until maybe sometime in 2015. So I don't really think that's going to be an issue. The other concern that I have is corporate profits beginning to slow. I mean, we've had, you know, an unbelievable number of quarters. I think it's 14 quarters in a row of continued U.S. corporate profits rising. And at some point, you're going to see that to slow. So how the market will respond to that is anybody's guess. But you know it certainly could be to the downside. So these are things that I'm looking at, that I'm watching, and you know, keeping a pulse on for our clients as we maneuver their assets.
Steve, I have a question for you. What do you see happening with the minimum wage in this state?
Well, minimum wage, what is it right now, $10 an hour?
As far as I know, yeah.
Yeah.
$10 an hour? No, that's not the minimum wage. It's $7.25, I believe.
No.
Is it $10.25?
No. I think it just went up.
Not to 10.
Yeah.
Not to 10.
I'm not exactly an expert in that particular regard, but I do think that, you know, we need to be careful in a capitalistic society with things like that. Again, you know, capitalism is win, lose. And, you know, working hard to make a better life, being competitive, employees need to be competitive in order to say, hey, look, I can go somewhere else and get a better wage. So I think when we begin to raise the minimum wage too much, too fast, I think you take a lot of that away. And, of course, that does hurt corporate profits. And, again, I don't want to sound like a fat cat and, you know, one of these Wall Street pigs that we hear about, and I certainly am not. I respect the average worker out there, and I respect the folks that are young and getting started, and that are working at McDonald's or Walmart and places like that. But I do believe in a minimum wage, but I just think, you know, we just raised it not that long ago. I think it would be a mistake to be looking at that going forward anytime soon.
I believe it's $8 now. That's what
is
it
that
is.
What it is?
Yes.
Oh, well, we inflated it then, Steve.
I think it's 10 or something like
it
that.
It would be wonderful if it were 10, yeah. But it's
Colin,
eight.
I think you're making $8 an
hour. Oh, in 2016, it's supposed to go to 10.
Yeah, 2016.
2016.
Oh, okay.
That's why, because we'd heard that number.
Steve, what should we be investing our money in right now?
Well, I'll tell you what. Even though the U.S. market was up 29% last year, I still see enormous pockets of value. I don't know that I would be an index investor, you know, just investing in the S&P 500, although I do believe that will probably increase 10% in 2014. There are marvelous investments. Would you like me to give you a couple of recommendations?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. First of all, the financial sector, those big banks, all those banks and institutions that we quote-unquote bailed out back in 2008, those are outstanding investments right now. Why? Well, number one, they got bailed out, so we know the government's going to back them up. But more importantly, in addition to the fact that they paid back all that money, and by the way, I didn't mention this Wednesday night, but it is worth noting that the U.S. government did profit on the TARP program, the Troubled Asset Relief Program that they instituted. All those investments in Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, all of those banks that were forced to take the money, they paid it back with interest. And the government, by the way, made a huge investment in Citigroup. They made billions of dollars in profit on that. So the taxpayer won in that regard. But the point is, these financials were the bad boys. And they were the poster children of all that went wrong in 2008 and 2009 and all that particular area. And so they, in addition to being bashed by our president over the last 2-3 years, these investments have really been out of favor. But guess what, Colin? They're making money, and they're making money hand over fist. And if you overlaid a chart of the financial index over the S&P 500, the S&P, of course, is at all-time highs. The financial companies index is only about 70% of where it was from its high. So these are undervalued stocks, and my recommendation would be obviously see your financial advisor, if you have one, feel free to contact our office if you don't or you want a second opinion. But I would really be looking at overweighting in things like, you know, Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, or if you want to be a bit more conservative, maybe just a mutual fund that invests in solely the financial industry stocks.
I have another question, Steve. What about the idea of investing in real estate? You know, at some point, I know a lot of people I know back, well, that's when I was in San Diego, were investing in real estate, you know, investment properties, saying this is, you know, this is the way to generate income. How do you see that fitting into this economy this coming year?
Lisa, I'm glad you asked that question because real estate is definitely on the trend up. And as the economy improves, real estate values, not only primary residences, but I think more importantly, commercial real estate is going to continue to improve. And I'm going to focus my comments on commercial real estate because that's really something that is investable for the average person out there. People who want to invest in primary real estate or rental real estate, you know, single-family dwellings, typically have to, you know, buy a house and rent it out in order to profit from that. And that's a high risk, high reward type of a proposition and really isn't doable for the average person. But the average person can take advantage of the commercial real estate market, which offers outstanding dividend yields. And right now, again, are one of those pockets of undervaluation that we see at our firm here and that we are overweighting in client portfolios. I mean, you can get yields, Lisa, right now of anywhere between 5% and 7% on a commercial real estate investment REITs, real estate investment trusts, and these can be owned privately or publicly traded REITs, and there's advantages and disadvantages to both, and don't really have the time to go into the details of that right now, but this is definitely an area, and one of the key reasons why, in addition to an improving economy, is this very important fact, that back in 2007, understand, commercial real estate requires big-time assets and big-time investors to do building. When all of that dried up in 07, I mean, building stopped. It stopped dead, cold, like going off a cliff. And then over the next 5 years, there was no commercial real estate building, none. And so the supply today is essentially the supply that it was 5-6 years ago. And yet the demand has grown. So as a result, I feel not only are these yields very safe, and obviously in a zero interest rate environment, to get anywhere between 5 and 7%, that's phenomenal. But to have a safe dividend yield in that area is even better. But I also think investors are going to profit from an increase in the underlying value of that real estate.
Thank you, Steve. That's Steve Wagner of Wagner Financial.
Thank you.
Are you and your spouse contemplating a divorce? Divorce is very stressful and can present a minefield of obstacles. Lisa Zonder is a divorce attorney and mediator. She can help you through this process, providing a number of alternatives to court, such as mediation and collaborative divorce with a professional team. Lisa's main office is on Townsgate Road in Westlake Village. She also serves mediation clients in her satellite office on Camden Drive in Beverly Hills. One call to Lisa will set you on the path to a peaceful and economical resolution that is focused on your family. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zonderfamilylaw.com. Contact Lisa Zonder today, certified family law specialist, State Bar of California, Board of Legal Specialization. Call 805-777-7740 or go online at zonderfamilylaw.com. If you mention you heard it on the radio, your first consultation is free for local and qualified clients. Call 805-777-7740. That's Lisa Zonder, 805-777-7740, or email Lisa at zonderfamilylaw.com. Consultations are granted based on appropriate qualification as determined by Lisa Zonder. Her practice is limited to family law matters in Ventura County and Beverly Hills.
Lisa, a little earlier we were talking about making relationships work. You have some other thoughts about that?
I do. And I read a 2007 article, you know, in preparation for today, and I just wanted to share it with you. And it was a research project that yielded some very interesting information. It was through the Family Research Laboratory that they call the Love Lab. And it was a Dr. Gottman, John Gottman. And he's been studying marriage and divorce for the past 35 years. And he screened thousands of couples. He interviewed them, tracked their interactions over time. and he mathematically analyzed data and generated some hard scientific evidence on what makes good relationships. Now, this is interesting because it's not just, you know, another blog on, you know, social media or something. He was asked, Dr. Gottman, what's your biggest discovery? And here's what he said. He said, it sounds simple, but in fact, you could capture all my research findings with the metaphor of a salt shaker. Instead of filling it with salt, fill it with all the ways you can say yes, and that's what a good relationship is. Yes, you say, that is a good idea. Yes, that's a great point. I never thought of that. Yes, let's do that if you think it's important. Because if you sprinkle the yeses throughout your interactions, that's what a good relationship is. And it's particularly important for men whose ability to accept influence from women is really one of the most critical issues in a relationship. I thought that was pretty insightful. And
what does that mean, accept influence from women? What does that mean? Really?
What do you think it means?
I don't know.
I'll be a therapist now with you. How do you feel about
that? How do you feel about that? Well, obviously the input from both is very important, but accept influence from women?
Acknowledging their point. Acknowledging
but
their
that
point.
Should be both
yes,
ways,
that's
right?
A good point.
Both ways.
Right, but apparently the research shows that men have a harder time accepting influence from women.
Okay.
So with that in mind, you know, if the partner says, if your wife or girlfriend says, yeah, you know, I want to do something in particular, you know, go shopping today.
To an art show.
And you can buy me some clothes. You're supposed to say, yes, I guess we could do that. But
it's
in any event, I'm joking.
Said it's a man's world is wrong.
Oh,
it's
I don't know about that. I always
world.
Say it's that's not true. The deck is stacked against us, but I think one day we'll have a woman in the White House. We've got Janet Yellen now.
Oh, on the verge.
But I think what he says is really fascinating. He says, in contrast, in a partnership that's in trouble, the salt shaker's filled with all the ways you can say no. And in a violent relationship, for example, we see men responding to their wives saying no way a lot. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to control me or shut up.
That's all about testosterone.
Is that what it is?
That's all it is.
So you got to temper that, apparently, because when you're not willing to share power with your wife, the research shows there's an 81% chance that the marriage is going to self-destruct. You want me to say that again?
Please
81%
do.
Chance wow. So that your marriage is going to self-destruct if you don't learn how to share power with your wife.
So if you don't shut up and listen to the wife, you have a really good chance of the marriage going bust.
Sounds like it to me. But this is, you know, mathematical data. This isn't just, you know, a woman creating this research, and it's a male psychologist, so it has to be trustworthy, right?
Tom, input from you about that. I mean, you're going to sit back there and you're going to
put
say,
him on
yeah,
the hot seat. Why don't you?
The woman is right. Always right, because you're going to go home to mom any minute now, right?
Thank God I don't use a lot of salt. That's all I can say. Hardly any at all.
There are some who will disagree, and if you do disagree, maybe you'd like to drop us a line, lisa@divorcetalkradiocalifornia.com. We'll welcome your input. Any more pearls of wisdom in that regard, Lisa?
No, not in particular. I just think it's sage advice. When you hear something that's you know, quantified mathematically and done by a psychologist, I think you pay attention to it.
We have just a few minutes left, and perhaps we can touch on another topic in your area of specialization, mediation.
Sure.
And then we can continue next week, perhaps, on that topic. What is the ideal couple? What makes an ideal couple for divorce mediation?
For me, when a couple contemplates mediation, they have to come to the table willingly. They have to have a what have I got to lose approach and be respectful, especially when it comes to communications and feelings. They have to be somewhat empathetic.
I want to interrupt you there
for a
moment. If they had done that during the course of their marriage, they wouldn't be sitting in front of a mediator. Try to sort out the problems at the stage of divorce, right?
We're talking about ideal and aspirational.
Yes.
And it's true that when you come into mediation, sometimes you need the help of the mediator to, you know, compensate for some of those deficiencies or some of those inabilities. But I think also you can help people along in their communication skills as a mediator. And what I sometimes do is I'll do enhanced mediation and bring in a mental health professional who will serve as a divorce coach. And we use this a lot in collaborative divorce, and we've talked about it. But you're right. I mean, if they were perfect with each other in terms of communication skills, often they wouldn't be going through a divorce.
But then, Lisa, shouldn't couples consider going to therapy rather than just, you know, throw in the towel and let's get this thing over and done with the best, most feasible way?
Well, that's one of the first questions I ask any couple that comes into my office is, have you considered therapy? And I think, obviously, everybody should exhaust that possibility before they even think of filing for a divorce. Again, I think we've talked about this before, Colin,
yes.
But I'm not here to encourage divorces.
No, I understand
there,
that.
There
understand
are certainly
that.
Enough that happen organically. I'm just here to aid people in getting through their divorces
a
in a respectful
process,
way.
Right?
Yes, it's already painful. But I do think that if people try and improve their communication and work hard on their marriages and say yes often enough, as that study shows, you know, I think there are things people can do to remedy marriages that are in trouble, but some are beyond repair. And we're talking about getting those through the divorce process in a respectful way. And so if you have the ability to manage your emotions, you know, that will make you an ideal client. If you learn skills or you can be taught skills to help you stay calm, when somebody else is talking in the mediation, it could help you not only appear reasonable, but also help you focus on solutions, because there's lots of different styles of communication. If I'm just listening to you just to get ahead of you or to think about something else or my own agenda, that's not a respectful communication. What's really happening there is I'm not really hearing you. I'm listening, but I'm not hearing. So a lot of these communication skills are important to mediation.
We will continue on this topic, and we'll look at mediation as a viable option in a tight economy, and perhaps touch on simplified divorce in our show next week. You've been listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle, Saturdays 3 to 4 p.m. on AM 1590 KVTA. I'm Colin Flaxman. Have a great week.
Tune in every Saturday at 3 p.m. for Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle. This radio programming is not intended to encourage anyone to seek a divorce. The producers assume that callers are seeking basic information. The radio program is intended to be an informational format and does not constitute legal advice. Anyone with legal, mental health, financial, or other professional questions is directed to retain a competent professional after carefully interviewing qualified professionals. A guest appearance by a particular panelist does not constitute a specific recommendation by the producers as to the expertise of that professional, nor does that panelist's views necessarily reflect the views of the producer.